that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Manchester is Red podcast. My name is Stephen Riddleston. And I am back today after a little bit of time off on the podcast. I have been at work, but not on the podcast. My days have fell. But Samuel, I'm back with you today. It's just me and you, a two-hander on this podcast to dissect the final day of the season. Obviously on Sunday afternoon, Manchester United defeated Fulham 2-1 in the end after a little setback in the first half. And Sancho scored, Fernandes scored to round off quite a good afternoon, actually. So how are you? You obviously in the press box yesterday.
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Not bad. As for the game itself, if you want me to continue talking about the game, Stephen, unless you've got a burning issue
You've got my green light. That was just my first question, really, Samuel. It was a very uplifting afternoon, wasn't it? Coming back from that setback and then to have Ten Hag's speech and to end the season with a win. It's really positive, wasn't it?
It was. It was probably the most positive it's been at the ground for a decade since their coronation day in the rain back in 2013. A couple of us went pitch side in the hope of getting someone in the mix zone sooner rather than later. We didn't get anyone, but we were by the tunnel as they were doing their lap of honour or lap of appreciation, and there was a lot of colour gleaned from that. Just the families waiting, the reception the players were getting, just the feel good atmosphere. Really, I mean, as I said, in the last 10 years there haven't been many occasions like that due to a variety of issues. I think the last home game last season might even have been played, it might have been late April or early May against Brentford, and there were two more games left, and of course the penultimate game was that dreadful defeat at Brighton, and the season had been a write-off by the time of that last home game. There's been the pandemic as well, so that restricted numbers even when a few thousand were let in for that Fulham game a couple of years ago, and there have just been other seasons where it's been unsuccessful, or in the case of in 2017, where it was quite uplifting with some of the young players getting their debuts and Josh Harrop scoring. You had that surreal Jose Mourinho non-press conference where he turned up. We weren't aware that he'd turned up really early. The few journalists that were in there inexplicably decided not to ask him a question and he left. So it was very different yesterday with Ten Hag doing that rousing address. There was the dash of the Tommy Doherty about him ahead of an FA Cup final, and the crowd really responded to that. There was a genuine and sustained attempt to still voice their opposition to the Glazer family's occupation there. But when Ten Hag spoke, that's when it was more harmonious, and the mutineering ceased for that point. And it was pretty charming as well, just seeing all these little tiny kids running around with daddy on the back of their shirts, trying to score a goal, having a kick about. As I said, it was a very harmonious atmosphere there, and it was quite amusing. Obviously, you're not earwigging deliberately, but sometimes you can't help but hear kids, especially when they're in such an enthusiastic mood. And I think Bruno Fernandes' daughter, who's I think she's only about six or seven, and she's only lived in Manchester for 3 years, but she's already got a Mancunian accent. Casemiro's little boy's got good ball control, albeit with his hands. He was running off down the tunnel with a football. And anyone who's dealt with a toddler, if you're going out for a day or for a family outing, on your checklist, a ball is as essential as nappies and milk, really. So it was, I think irrespective of the final result, because of the cup final coming up, because they have had a successful season already, it was always going to end on quite a positive note. But they got the job done yesterday in terms of banking those points to finish third, which is very good going given the starting point of the season. I certainly didn't have United as finishing in the top three.
Yeah, the noise when he was making the speech was great. The atmosphere was fantastic, and kind of the chance of United coming through. It was a really, really nice way to end it at home. And they've been brilliant at Old Trafford all season. It's been the highlight of the campaign, really, their home form. Beating City at home, Arsenal at home, Liverpool at home. Great performances. So it was fitting to end the season with a nice home win. But obviously, Samuel, Fulham took the lead in the first half. I think it was the 17th minute or so, through Tete, free header at that corner. And it could have been two, if not for David De Gea. Yeah. Obviously, Casemiro gave away the penalty, didn't he? A bit of a clumsy challenge, and De Gea actually saves a penalty. Could you believe it? Could you believe what you're watching? Well, David De Gea, for the first time since October 2014, saves a penalty. So were you shocked?
At Old Trafford, yeah. It was as you say, since that was the first in nearly 9 years at Old Trafford. I couldn't believe it, and then Match of the Day did somewhat disparage it when I think the commentator said that's now Mitrovic's fourth missed penalty of the season. So even when De Gea makes a save from a penalty, it's against a guy who, unbeknownst to me anyway at the time, has seemingly a dreadful penalty record. And I'm pretty sure Mitrovic might have missed against Scotland when it was the Euros playoff back in 2020. That might have been the decisive penalty kick. In fact, I mean, you obviously watch him for Newcastle. I'm not sure if he had many penalties to take up there, but he's clearly not got a particularly good record. But nevertheless, it still had to be saved. De Gea went the right way, and there was a louder roar than you'd normally get, I think, for penalty saves, especially in a rather mundane game with little riding on it. And I think that was partly because the crowd couldn't quite believe De Gea had made that save. So it's interesting timing as well, ahead of a final where, if it does go to penalties, and given De Gea's record, ordinarily you'd have been wondering, it's depending on who the substitute keeper is, would Ten Hag actually take De Gea off and put a keeper on who may actually be more entrusted with a penalty shootout environment. But I think given that he's made that save yesterday, it feels like that would be a stretch now if it was to get to it. But again, I think anyone who saw the penalty shootout and the Championship playoff final on Saturday, it does feel like the standard of penalty shootouts is at an all-time high at the moment. It seems very, very rare that a shootout doesn't go into.
Booted the ball in the Stretford end in celebration, and after the full-time whistle, he was presented with his Golden Glove award. It's probably been a bit of a strange season for De Gea, Samuel. I mean, he's come out at the end of it with the most clean sheets in the Premier League, more than Alisson, more than Edison, more than Nick Pope, who are the top goalkeepers at the moment at the top of the table. And yet, there's obviously scrutiny around his position as number one. We've saw mistakes against Sevilla, against West Ham, and we've talked about it at length on this podcast about how limited he is with the ball at his feet and his distribution. If that was going to be a send-off, it would be perfect, wouldn't it? But the chances are, obviously he's out of contract next month, but we're expecting a new deal for David De Gea.
Yeah, those are all the noises coming out from United, be it off the record or on the record. Ten Hag has spoken about De Gea's situation a few times in the last few weeks, and it's not a particularly stirring topic because, as I said, everyone expects him to sign a renewal, but when you're approaching the final month of your contract, there's always going to be an outside chance. Is this a send-off? Is this his last game at Old Trafford for United? He didn't conduct himself in a manner that suggested that was the case. I'm sure some people would have initially read too much into the fact that he was carrying his daughter out for the pre-match anthem, but that there were quite a few players last week who had their kids as mascots for the Chelsea game. I think Casemiro had both his children with him, and I think Rafael Varane might have had his son with him, and yesterday Harry Maguire had his nephew and one of his daughters. He was holding their hands as he walked out. So that happens quite a lot, certainly towards the end of the season with players, whether they're leaving or not. And the assumption is still that he will be at United next season, De Gea. And I completely agree, it has been a peculiar season. I don't think anybody would have been will be nominating him, to be in the team of the season either. He has had a few games where he's been in match-winning form for United, West Ham in the league, and in the FA Cup, they spring to mind. Leicester at home as well, when he made two terrific stops from, I think it was Harvey Barnes and Kelechi Iheanacho,
yeah,
and they might have both been at 0-0 in a half where United were dreadful and somehow 1-0 up at half-time, and then the second half they were pretty clinical and won quite well. But for every one of those saves, there's the Brentford howler, there's the West Ham howler, there's the Sevilla howler, and beyond those mistakes, he's, as you said, his limitations have been exposed on quite a number of occasions this season. It was amusing even yesterday that they had a free kick United inside their own third by the touchline, and Lindelof was hanging back as if to say, pass me the ball and we can play out from the back. And De Gea was almost getting annoyed with him, saying, get up there, I'm punting this. So there was definitely some things with De Gea that will not change for the worse, but there are other things that might not change for the better, and that there have still been some games this season where he's rolled back the years with the saves that he's made.
If I had to force you to give him a rating out of 10, Samuel, for this season, what would you give him? I'll give you a second to think, because Maguire came out in his interview with MUTV, he said, quote, he had an amazing season. And then obviously Roy Keane was in the Sky studio and he was saying, look, get rid of De Gea. I'd be more in the Keane camp. Yeah. And as you've just said, he still remains a very good shot stopper. He's still a very decent shot stopper, and we've saw that time and time again. But his all-round game has just not evolved with what the demands of a goalkeeper in 2023. And that's for me why this season probably should be his last, but it isn't, as we've just discussed.
No, it probably won't be. I'd give him a 6 out of 10. I don't think he's had a bad season. I wouldn't necessarily say he's had a good season either. And that Golden Glove award, I mean, Keane obviously didn't like it, which is very on brand for him, that United had a picture of it. But I actually think the team photo, maybe that was more reflective, that it was a collective effort rather than an individual one. And some of those individual rewards now are ridiculous. Like, there's a Playmaker of the Year award, which I presume is for the number of assists you get, I take it, which is just...
What about XG, Samuel?
Like,
what about for who's
trying to
racked
make
up the most XG? That would be,
oh, Jesus,
that would
yeah.
be a brilliant
that's
award.
That's going to happen,
that.
Isn't it? Yeah, that is going to happen. Ty mentioned XG in the press room yesterday, talking about some nonsense or other. Yeah, I did. Yeah, it wasn't to be honest to Ty, and I could say this because others said it as well, but it wasn't the dullest thing he said when he was suggesting an angle for an interviewee that we've got one of the players this week about a two-legged cup final, and it was like he'd I don't know whether he'd recalibrate himself.
See, Tyrone can't defend himself.
I don't know
we'll
what
have to
he
give
was
him a
thinking.
Response on Friday later in the week.
No. Well, I won't be on the podcast next week, as I'll be off. But you need to ask him about the two-legged final.
Excellent.
Angle and see whether he still remembers what he was talking about. So yeah, I'd give De Gea a 6, but I did say that coming from Maguire. But Maguire is. He's quite a dependable talker for United because he's going to toe the company line. But, I mean, I did feel for him a bit. There was a story on the official website or the app last week where it said Maguire reviews the season. You just think, like, of all the people to choose. Yeah. Okay, I suppose he had a good seat to watch most of it, but you're really setting yourselves up for the fall with things like
we'll
that.
We'll come on to Maguire a bit actually in the second part, but we'll discuss Fred to begin with in the second part, Sammy. We'll leave it there for part one, and we'll be back in a moment for part two.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
1 in 8. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to McDonald's.
1 in 8 start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
Fred was an interesting performance, Samuel. It was very Fred, wasn't it? We talked about Keane being on brand, but I mean, that was a very Fred performance. We've called them a bit of an enigma on this podcast. Something goes from the brilliant, the sublime, to the absolute disastrous sometimes. We saw that at Barcelona at the Nou Camp where he was quite poor and then all of a sudden he burst into life and he had a good game. And it was a bit like that yesterday. Very poor in the first half. Obviously, kind of, I think he got noted down officially for that assist for Sancho, but it kind of ricocheted off him and went through, didn't it, for Sancho to poke in. But in the second half, he comes through, receives that ball, and to have the vision and to execute that pass, the reverse pass to Fernandes, it was fantastic. And I think everyone kind of gasped, all the supporters in Old Trafford. And a great finish from Fernandes as well. But that's kind of Fred in a nutshell, isn't it, really, that whole passage in that 50 minutes, 60 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was... Unfortunately, with certain Brazilian footballers, they have a name which is just not as exotic as the great names of Zico, Socrates, Pele, Rivaldo, Ronaldo, Ronaldinho. You know, you think of those names, you think, well, they must be great when you're called Fred. And sometimes he just lives up to that name or that shortened version of his name. He was absolutely abysmal for 54 minutes yesterday. Then he gets the ball there and the pass, for me, it trumps the goal, and it was quite a nicely taken goal as well by Fernandes, the way he just dinked it over Leno. But it was a great pass, and that salvaged his performance. And he is such a strange player because he can have these absolutely brilliant games, and overall he's actually been a pretty decent signing for United. But then he has certain games where you just think he can't pass, he can't tackle, he can't shoot. It's like he literally cannot do anything. So he blows the hottest of hots and the coldest of colds. And yesterday, it was almost identical to the Barcelona game, in that I think it was around about the same time that he played the ball in for Rashford to equalise at Camp Nou. It was 50-something minutes, I think, quite early in the second half. And really, looking at his starter role yesterday, I don't think anybody was surprised that he started, because you sensed that Eriksen would be taken out of the team to give him a breather, given the Thursday-Sunday schedule, which you have to manage more carefully with players of a certain age and certain conditioning. And there are times this season where Eriksen should have been rested and he wasn't, and that did contribute to him being sidelined for quite some time, in that he should never have been playing against Reading in that FA Cup game where Andy Carroll injured him. And really, I think with certain recalls yesterday, in the case of Garnacho, it was getting him up to speed. He's not quite ready for 90 minutes. That was mainly rotation. With Fred, you do sense that Ten Hag, that was possibly a warm-up act for the Cup final, because he did start against City in January. He started in the League Cup final and started both games against Barcelona, started away at Anfield as well. He has started in a lot of big games this season. And when you're coming up against the best team in the world, I think there is going to have to be an alteration there of some sort from United to counter City. And it worked reasonably well in January when Fred came into the team and Eriksen pushed higher up. And although they're at risk of showing their hand there, and City have evolved as a team, their defence that day in January, it had João Cancelo in it, Kyle Walker started, and then about 2 months later, you've got Pep Guardiola saying Kyle Walker can't play in this new formation that City have settled into. And United are going to have some sort of a tweak there. But whatever it is, you feel as though they've got to have Fred in there being energetic and trying to get them higher up the pitch, aid the pressing. They can't just depend on Fernandez, who's pretty good at pressing. They need someone else to supplement him. And with Fred, I think the advantage is, and you saw it yesterday, Casemiro was very, very happy just to take a back seat there. And they've got a good understanding, both being Brazilian, both teammates in the national team. So it would seem to be the way forward. It's far from a guarantee that it's going to tame City or give United the advantage in the final. I don't think anybody's suggesting that whatsoever. But you have to play the percentages sometimes, and often it's the case that the best players don't always make for the best team. There will be far more talented players than Fred potentially at Wembley who will be sat on the bench, but for the balance of the team and the quality of the opponent, I would argue he's actually essential. And the irony is, it could be his last game.
It could be his last appearance at Old Trafford. That's what I was going to say. I mean, there was a little footage, wasn't there, of having a chat with Marco Silva outside the car park, Samuel, and then you've rode the line today. Obviously, that Fulham are indeed interested in making an offer for Fred this summer. So, for anyone who hasn't saw that, as usual, but they should have, obviously, Samuel. Can you give a brief update on that?
Well, I was sent that video last night, and I forwarded it onto a contact, and they confirmed that is already in the works, or it's at least been suggested to United as an option, because it's quite common knowledge that United want a midfielder, but they also are going to have to make room for that midfielder, so that means selling one. You're not going to sell Casemiro. You're not going to sell Christian Eriksen. So it's always been one of McTominay and Fred. And I remember when I did a piece, I think it was last month, about the players United should sell. There were two positions where I actually put, it should be this one or that one. And for midfield, it was McTominay or Fred, because although McTominay's had some interest from Newcastle, he's the youngest midfielder at United. He's the youngest senior midfielder. And United haven't actually provisionally planned to sell him either. Whereas with Fred, you have probably rinsed all you can out of him during his time at the club. He's been there for 5 years. He's just turned 30 and he's out of contract next year. But his resale value is still pretty good. I mean, they're going to make a loss on Fred, but they spent £52 million on him 5 years ago. They were never going to make a profit on him anyway. If they can make £20 million on him, which I don't think is beyond the realms of possibility, especially if he does start an FA Cup final. So his stock is still going to be quite high. Brazil international, played for Man United for 5 years. I think that's the sensible way forward. And then you can absolutely, you've got the leverage and you've also got part of the finance to sign a younger and better midfielder. So I think for all parties, it makes infinite sense. As soon as I saw that video of Silva and Fred, I thought, well, that would make that stacks up, really. I mean, Fulham have signed quite a few Portuguese speakers in the last year. I think Paulinho, Andres Pereira was bought from United for a reasonable fee as well, even though he had barely played for the club in his last couple of years. When he was attached to them, he'd been loaned out and the loans hadn't been particularly successful. I think, is it Carlos Vinicius, he went there, and Willian has been a really good signing for Fulham as well. So Fulham have had some reasonable success, well, actually very good success, I'd say. I think Paulinho has been a very good signing by them. So they've had good success with this, rebranding the team with Portuguese speakers. And of course, the coach is Portuguese as well. And playing for Fulham, as you've seen with Mitrovic, even if you get relegated, there are still perks of playing for Fulham, because it's London living. It's a beautiful part of London. I don't think Fulham will go down next season. They've stopped that yo-yoing, so it would appeal to Fred, I think, on a professional level.
It almost seems too
good
to be true for all parties, doesn't it?
Him to make that move.
It does suit everyone, as you just said. It does.
Well, yeah, it seems like it is. If it doesn't happen now, then it would be a failure on someone's part. Even though we're possibly running before we can walk with this deal. But absolutely, I think that I mean, United will be prepared. They'll know which midfield or midfielders are attainable and who are receptive to joining them as well. So you have to have confidence, I think, if you're a United fan in Ten Hag, that he will get that right. And as decent and handy and useful a squad player as Fred is, and he has had some real highlights for United over the years, he's not expendable, and he's one of those players that if he were to go, I don't think there would ever be a game next season where supporters would be walking away after a defeat or a draw, possibly, and saying, you know, we really missed Fred today. You're not going to get that. So he's been a decent signing over 5 years, and if this is his swan song, then so be it. I think, as I said, it seems like
I always find it really interesting when Ten Hag talks about McTominay, actually, because he's always very, very complimentary. And he says that he's always got an important role to play and how much of a valued member of the squad he is. I mean, obviously with his age, his profile, I think his physicality as well, he adds a lot to that team physically. Why, you know, his stature, he's a tall lad, isn't he? He's the tallest one in the team, obviously, him and Varane. Yeah.
He looks it. Well, certainly when you go to, as you have at Carrington, go to Carrington, yeah, and see them training.
He has presence at corners, both attacking and defensive, when he does play, anyways, when he does play. Obviously, it could be Fred's last game, Samuel, at Old Trafford, but could it also possibly be Maguire's last game at Old Trafford? You frowned there because you didn't know what I was going to say. But as if...
I don't know which name.
That was my curious league start of the season on the final day of the season, and he'll obviously be very, very disappointed at that. He was asked about his game time, and he kind of said, yeah, look, obviously I would like to play more, but a club like Manchester United needs a big squad. It was a very media trained answer for the club captain, unsurprisingly. But could we see Maguire leave this summer? Is it starting to feel realistic? Because we're talking about the kind of the comments that Ten Hag makes on McTominay. I think in the last few weeks when I've read Maguire's quotes, it doesn't really seem to me, or it doesn't strike me anyways, as a player that is looking to move or is desperate to move. I know privately behind the scenes that could be completely different, but he's not really giving me that impression that he's desperate to go out there and get a start, really, a consistent start.
The only time where he sounded maybe slightly aggrieved about it was when he was on England duty in March, and he was asked, do you feel underappreciated? He said, well, I'm appreciated here. And I thought at the time, well, okay, you're saying you're not appreciated at United effectively there, but is that from the supporters who, apart from cheering his substitution against Atletico Madrid last year, they've not given him any flack, the matchgoers. He got booed by England idiots last year. And in the first game back with United, that was the only time his crass England chant was
his name chanted at Chelsea, Samuel, when you were there United on Thursday supporters. Night? Because he went out to warm up, and obviously I was at home, but I couldn't tell if it was the Chelsea fans taking the Michael in singing his name, or whether it was United fans. But he was just out of the warm up.
I think it might have just been Chelsea.
I thought that was more.
It might have just been Chelsea fans and their dreadful version of that chant. I mean, it's been a really bad season, it feels, for football fans. Chants. I mean, Fulham yesterday, not great at all. To put it politely. But Maguire's, like, if he, whatever, whoever he's referring to with that, what does he expect? Why is he entitled to widespread appreciation? He had a good first season, a decent second season, a nightmare third season, and it's been even worse in the fourth season. And look, he, as you say, he has been media trained to an inch of his life, and that has not helped him either. You had that time Roy Keane said that he sounded like a robot when he was doing.
Do you remember his interview before the Liverpool game, I get the feeling, last season as well, away at Anfield? That didn't go down well.
Yeah, there are times when he's inauthentic, unfortunately, and the proper captain at United now, Fernandes, is a very, very authentic talker. He's the best talker in the team, so that also doesn't help Maguire's case. But I think there was a United Twitter feed put out a video from Maguire last night, and some of the replies were like, oh, damn, I thought this was his farewell message. And, you know, it's the predictable stuff from online fans. But I don't think he's ever, to his credit, he's not rocked the boat this season. You look at you look at how Ronaldo conducted himself and what a disgrace he was, abandoning his professionalism and torching his relationship with the manager, disrespecting the manager. The way he conducted himself was absolutely appalling. And Maguire, he would have felt aggrieved, no doubt, that he was dropped as quickly as he was at the start of the season. But he's kept his counsel, he's kept his head down. He didn't want to leave in January, understandably so, with United going for three trophies at the time. He has won a winner's medal with United. He lifted the League Cup in February. But even that day, the manner of his cameo, it was reminiscent of Wayne Rooney coming on for his final appearance against Ajax in the Europa League final in 2017, where essentially you are only coming on so that you're ready, you're in your kit to lift the cup. And that cannot continue for Maguire next season, because he's not going to be starting at the start of next season unless, if he is still at United, unless there are one or two injuries, because Lindelof has usurped him again. A mischievous headline maker, when the team news dropped on Sunday, they'd have gone with Harry Maguire ruled out of FA Cup final, because you knew with Maguire starting and Varane being rested, what Ten Hag intends to do next week, it's almost certainly going to be Lindelof, Varane as the starting centre-backs, and rightly so. And he was fortunate this season, Maguire, that where the World Cup was in the middle of it, well, it was only a third of the way into the season, I suppose, he could get away with having quite a peripheral role for 3 months going into a major tournament. I don't think come the Euros next year, he can get away with having what, nearly 2 years as a peripheral figure, potentially at United, and still expect to be turning out for England in Germany at Euro 2024. He's also been fortunate that there haven't been many centre-halves really making a compelling case to take his place. I mean, Tomori doesn't get in the squads. Tyrone Mings has been brought Tyrone back in Mings. From the cold. Eric Dier is back out in the cold. So, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you are still looking at John Stones and Harry Maguire being the centre-backs for the Euros next year. But Maguire does need to play. And Southgate said last week his situation can't continue. It's going to be an interesting summer for Southgate, because there are a lot of his players who could be on the move for different reasons. With Bellingham and Rice, are they going to be operating at a higher level? With Maguire and Calvin Phillips, they need fulfilling playing time next season. And in order to get that, both of them almost certainly need to move on. I think
if the England carrot wasn't there, he might just be happy just to stay and try to fight for that position where he is in the pecking order.
But yeah,
he really cares about playing for England, doesn't he? And to be fair, he's had some excellent moments. Yeah very good.
And he's played well for England.
He always delivers. Yeah. He always really does.
Yeah. Three good tournaments.
We'll talk about Garnacho, Samuel, before quickly moving on, because he started on the left wing, obviously. I think, was it Sancho that started against Chelsea? And I tweeted, I was a bit disappointed. I wanted Garnacho to start. I'd been banging that drum, because when you see these performances when Sancho starts, and he's sometimes been fortunate to do so, Garnacho's replaced him, like against Bournemouth. And he's done more in a few minutes than Sancho's probably done throughout that kind of whole game. That was definitely the case against Bournemouth, in my opinion, anyways. But obviously, Garnacho started yesterday. Yeah. Sancho was on the right. But the biggest problem is, I guess, and it's not really a criticism, because he's 18 years old and he's still going to have plenty to work on, but he's failing to impact games when he starts, isn't he, from the first whistle through the 90 minutes. And that was the case, I guess, yesterday. He had a few good chances. He hit the woodwork, did he, in the end? What did you make of his performance? And I guess you're in agreement that that's probably the case with Garnacho at the moment. I think, to be fair, Ten Hag said that as well, didn't he? When his contract was signed recently, he said, look, the next challenge for him, he needs to start doing it from the start.
Yeah, and you could probably count on one hand how many games he's probably played well in this season as a starter. And the first might have been on his full debut against Sheriff, who... Yeah, it's FC Sheriff, so that's not exactly a testing a real test of a player's readiness in that environment. He did very well against West Ham in the cup when he scored that late winner, but he won't be starting in the FA Cup final, because I mean, as you've seen with him already, he's still too raw, and obviously he's adored Ronaldo, but you go back to when Ronaldo in his first full season at United, when he was 18 and he turned 19, I think, in February of it, he was he was cutting it as a starter and doing it in some pretty significant games. His two best performances that season were possibly the FA Cup semi-final against Arsenal when United were big underdogs, and then the FA Cup final where he just, you know, he tore Millwall to shreds, and United, they won 3-0, but the scoreline flattered Millwall. So, you know, high stakes occasions, and Ronaldo as a 19-year-old, he really well and truly turned up. It's completely forgivable for Garnacho to still be feeling his way into that role as a starter, and how it differs from coming on in a game, because as you said, at Bournemouth he was electric. The first thing he did was win a corner, and he did a lovely bit of skill getting past Lerma down the left as well. It was right in front of us, and I think there were even oohs like from the Bournemouth fans when he did that, out of appreciation, because he is a talent, and United have got a hell of a player on their hands. And really, I think it would be logical to have him on the bench for the cup final, because he's shown how many time and again this season as a sub what a brilliant impact he can have, and he is one of the game changers available to Ten Hag. So although he probably should have scored that chance when Malacia laid it to him, and he had a decent opportunity I think a couple of minutes earlier when he hit it wide, although he didn't quite crown the end of his league season with a goal, he's had an exceptional season when you look at it all in the context of it. I mean, he was pretty much a tourist on the pre-season tour because his attitude wasn't quite right, so he wasn't played by Ten Hag. But it's also easily forgotten that he came back to pre-season early. He was entitled to a 3-week break, having played in the Toulon tournament, but he came back early to be there on Ten Hag's first day. So although he did air a little bit in during the pre-season tour, he'd already, you know, shown a good attitude coming back early, and there's every chance he'll have an important part to play in the final. He got the assist for Rashford's winner against City in January, and United will need I think it's due to be quite a hot day as well on Saturday, and you have to factor that into preparations for these occasions, and United will certainly have some speedy options to turn.
Penny seems to have dropped anyways with his attitude. You bang on there. And I think I said this recently on the podcast, you just think it was the second week of May last year when he played in the Youth Cup final, and he was so talismanic obviously in that campaign for the under-18s, and he left it in 1 year on, 12 months later, and he's probably going to have a role from the bench in the actual FA Cup final at Wembley. So it's been a remarkable 12 months for him, and I said, look, at the end of the day, usually in usual terms of progress, he'd be in the under-21s, but he's now a valued part of that squad, and fair play to him, and long may it continue. We'll be back in a moment for part three anyways. That's it for part two. Samuel, I know I mentioned Ten Hag's speech at the start there, but for any supporters who didn't see it, obviously there has been clips online, but the game wasn't televised, obviously, well, at least not in the UK. MUTV did show the speech after. Can you paint a picture of what it was like, just briefly, from the press box? Because I thought it was fantastic. It just showed the connection, really, between supporters and the manager and the club, really, that's been built up again this season, because that was shattered and absent last year.
Yeah, that it did make a big difference. I mean, there was no point having the manager make a speech at the end of last season's final game, because it was an interim manager. On this occasion, United have got a permanent manager and a very good one. They absolutely got that decision right in April, March, April last year, when they settled on Ten Hag. And you don't really see him interacting too much with the supporters, because he's so focused on what's going on in the pitch. A lot of managers, they do. I mean, Diego Simeone, he's like a cheerleader. Most games with Atletico Madrid and Antonio Conte can be a little bit like that. But Ten Hag is, you know, he's not really had that opportunity. Not that managers always have that opportunity, but I think it was impressive. As I said earlier, the supporters were, you know, chanting about the Glazers, and we want Glazers out and what have you. But when Ten Hag, having thanked the players and his staff, when he turned his attention to the cup final and I think the words he used as well about how they'll give everything to bring the cup back to Old Trafford. The Freudian slip would have been to bring it back to Manchester, which obviously it's an all Manchester final. But it was a rousing speech, a succinct speech as well, which was probably made it more effective and certainly the best received speech by United fan by a United manager, since Ferguson's final one, all 10 years ago against Swansea, and the whole your job now is to get behind our new manager, and
that worked out well.
Yeah, it worked out. Yeah, worked out absolutely appallingly, as some of us anticipated it would. But United are in it. As I said, the atmosphere yesterday was, although it's not completely different from the opening weekend, given that there was some mutiny going on back then over the ownership, and that's only intensified as the season's gone on with the possible takeover kicking around in the background. Ten Hag is clearly a presence who does unite the fan base, and they were chatting about Wembley at the start of the game and at the end of the game yesterday. It's been a long time since United had three Wembley trips in a calendar year, and that they're on the right track with him. Whether they win the cup final or not, this has been a successful season, and he's kept up his end of the bargain. And whatever happens with the ownership situation, they've got to back him. He's more than entitled to a similar outlay on new players as last summer.
I was trying to remember if they did a lap of honour last season. I seem to think that they'd actually scrapped it, but that was the award.
I think they did. Yeah, I think
they did. It was just so Brentford. It was the 3-0. So I watched the clip of it on YouTube, and they scurried around, sheepishly kind of walked around, briefly clapped, and got back in the changing rooms. I don't think many people stayed back and applauded them, and understandably so.
No, it was a night.
Two away games that followed that as well. That's the thing as well, because it was the third kind of game of the season, that wasn't it? The last one at Old Trafford.
It was a long way before the season ended as well, because I think they then played Brighton at the weekend, and then they didn't have a game for 2 weeks because you had the FA Cup final before the end of the season. So that final home game was like almost 3 weeks before the season ended. It was very unusual. But yeah, that was the night when Ronaldo came off, a fan turned to Harry Maguire and shouted, "Show some effing respect," because he wasn't stood on his feet clapping him. I think it was pretty well publicised by that at that time that there was this power struggle yeah, between Maguire and Ronaldo, which sounds ridiculous even saying it, but Ten Hag, credit to him, he's rendered that moot.
In another world, Maguire has 5 Ballon d'Ors and Ronaldo has 0. But we don't live in that world. We do not live in that world. Samuel, you've just said obviously Ten Hag's held up his end of the bargain. I'll just admit completely, I think I said at the start of the season, I had my own doubts personally about whether he succeeded. I looked at his CV and his body of work, and there's clearly potential to be a good manager, but Utrecht, Bayern Munich 2, Go Ahead Eagles didn't exactly make the CV of an ordinary Manchester United manager anyways. It's not usually the route taken, obviously, success at Ajax, but I've been pleasantly surprised along the way. There has been bumps in the road, of course, but 27 home wins in the season, it's been a match in the club record. They've finished on 75 points, which is second highest in the post Sir Alex Ferguson era. So for me, I think in an 8 out of 10, if we're going back to that scoring from earlier, I think a really, really pleasing first season, a promising first season. And as I've said, there have been a few disappointing results. But he's got big decisions right, and it has been tough. He's lost Ronaldo. He's been replaced by, well, Weghorst, which he mentioned yesterday in his press conference, didn't he, when he talked about his spending. So how have you assessed, really, if you're going to give him a number, a grade out of 10, would you agree with me? Would it be an 8 out of 10? Or would it be a 7? Or does that depend? I think you're going to say that depends on the cup final next weekend, probably, doesn't it, with you?
No, it's an 8 minimum, regardless of the cup final. If they were to win the cup, then I'd have to give him a 9. That would make it a great season. Because what's at stake in that game. But it's the core attributes of a manager. He's excelled them all, in that his man management is very good. You look at that squad, it's quite a big squad, but you don't hear anyone kicking off, which wasn't the case last season. The results were always going to ensure that players were kicking off, and the results this season, by and large, have been good, but there have been there have been, as you say, some really bad setbacks. There've been a few shellackings sporadically spread across the season. But you look at how he's handled Garnacho from that pre-season tour and the attitude not being right, and that's his academy legacy already. The handling of Ronaldo was nigh on flawless. The only mistake he made with Ronaldo was making him captain for his last game against Villa. Ronaldo didn't deserve that. The Rashford situation at Wolves, where he publicised that he disciplined him. He could have lied, but he didn't want to. And then Rashford comes on and scores. I think United have become more, certainly the midfield is a lot more sophisticated now. It's a modern midfield, even with two, you know, relative war horses in Casemiro and Eriksen, who are both 31. But it's a midfield worthy of Man United. Tactically, they're much more flexible, and that they're not as... It always used to feel like they were behind the curve as tactically. They couldn't press. They only ever had one tactic.
Very passive. Very passive.
Yeah, yeah. With Solskjaer, it was counter-attacking play. It was interesting. Solskjaer said the other week when he was at that appearance how he wanted to go on the front foot. He didn't like that there were games where he was playing a back three and he was trying to soak up... United were trying to soak up pressure and hit opponents on the counter-attack at home. But that's just someone who wasn't a tactician and isn't a tactician as a manager. And Ten Hag is. The important thing when they hired Ten Hag and when they came to that decision last year was that although Manchester United, that position at Manchester United has always been the manager, they needed a coach. And they've got a coach. It was interesting just observing Ten Hag on pre-season and that he'd let his assistants oversee training, he'd observe, and then as the session went on, he would become more and more involved in it, offering his tidbits, offering his advice. And ultimately, there's a new year that's been chiselled onto the honours board with the League Cup. They're back in the Champions League as well. I certainly didn't have them down to make the Champions League at the start of the season. Sometimes with those predictions, you have to make one just as the season starting, and that was quite early in the transfer window. But it was quite that summer, it was quite fraught. It wasn't until probably the last 10 days of August with the Liverpool result and signing Casemiro and signing Antony that all of a sudden things started to look a little bit rosier. For most of the summer, it was... There was a lot of anxiety among United fans as to what they were doing in the transfer market and whether they'd actually sufficiently reinforced the squad. And there was the Ronaldo.
They were spending more time interrailing around Europe than they were staying in midfield. They were taking a few trips, weren't they?
But they were. And as Ten Hag quite rightly pointed out at his press conference, they didn't invest in January. Newcastle signed Anthony Gordon for reasonable fee. Gakpo went to Liverpool. Arsenal signed Leandro Trossard, didn't they? So there's quite a few clubs around them. I mean, Chelsea, not in the picture, but they spent a hell of a lot of money. But a lot of their competitors, and you would still regard Chelsea as a competitor as well, they did invest in their squads, and United had to cut corners really with loan deals. And Weghorst has not been a good signing whatsoever. I mean, it's 2 goals in 30 games. Sabitzer has been quite a useful loan signing, I'd argue. Butland is just filler, just a backup. So he's done very well at all core levels, as I said. Man management, coaching, recruitment, results, trophies. Like, if you want to look at the essential pillars of an elite manager, an elite coach, I think he's done pretty damn well after his first season.
I'll give him credit for assembling a good coaching staff as well. You just kind of mentioned observing them. Steve McClaren, Mitchell van der Gaag, Eric Ramsey, Benny McCarthy. They've all played their role, haven't they, in improving players and getting the best out of that squad. And it was an interesting little graphic I saw, actually, Samuel. It was a keep or sell from last season where supporters kind of voted for, obviously, which players would like to keep. And you look at some of the players, I mean, 50% kind of wanted to get rid of Rashford, Shaw, and some of the most important players now of that squad, and that coaching staff and Ten Hag coaxed them back to the best, and obviously the players deserve the most credit for that as well, for getting their form again. If we just look at it quickly then, Samuel, because we're running out of time, but there is an FA Cup final this week, a big game. How do Manchester United stop City? Because we've touched upon it. They're a different beast at the moment. Pep Guardiola's been tinkering with that team all season, and all of a sudden he gets to the spring and he's got this settled side. Ruben Dias has come back in the defence. Haaland's been banging in goals for fun all season, to be fair. But they're going to be a real challenge to beat at Wembley, aren't they? But it's not impossible. United defeated City in January 2-1 with them two quick fire goals. And I think what you were talking about earlier with Fernandes on the wing and possibly Fred in midfield with Casemiro, that worked in January. Do you think that's going to be seen again? Do you think Ten Hag's going to lean that way?
I could certainly see Fernandes starting on the wing. I'd almost be surprised if he's not on the wing. There's an element of doubt still about Antony, but Ten Hag gave quite an upbeat update on him on Sunday. But the way it's going, it's almost where Antony's had his season interrupted, and he'll have gone, well, it's been 10 days going into that game without any real proper training. It still feels like, you know, I think the chances of him starting are still quite slim. You know, he'd have to be a really essential component of Ten Hag's plans for him to be starting the cup final, and maybe he was and is, and Ten Hag is banking on him being fit. And Ten Hag has said repeatedly, that he clearly believes it, that United play better with Martial starting. And there were certain giveaways, it felt, yesterday during that Fulham game, where Eriksen was rested, Varane was rested, and Martial coming out of the team. I would probably, if I'm doing educated guesswork here, I'd probably think that Martial will start with Rashford on the left. There may be seven or eight players who are absolute essentials for the cup final. I'd say De Gea, Varane, Shaw, Casemiro, Eriksen, Rashford, Fernandes. Now Lindelof has to start because he's been starting all the games. So you'd probably throw him in there. I think Wan-Bissaka is probably, given that he's started the majority of games recently.
I'd be quite bullish about him starting Wan-Bissaka. I think it's almost guaranteed.
I mean, Grealish has had a really good season, and think that Ten Hag would probably trust Wan-Bissaka more against him than Dalot. And looking at the other positions, you're probably thinking Fred, you're probably thinking Martial, and I think that's it. But I still think it would be in United's interests, and look, they'll be working on these things at the training ground, of course, but to have some element of surprise about them, in that maybe a player is not starting where you'd expect him to be starting. I remember the Champions League final in 2008, the way United lined up, the surprise was that Jason Park wasn't even in the squad, which he was, I think, pretty much in every newspaper that morning going over to Moscow. He was on the graphics to be starting the game. And in the end, Ferguson went with Carrick, Hargreaves and Scholes as his three midfielders. But Avram Grant later admitted this. United looked like they're in a 4-3-3 or 4-3-2-1. But all of a sudden, game kicks off and United are playing 4-4-2. And Chelsea didn't know what to do. Their plans, their preparation went out the window in an instant. And United, I mean, they did obliterate them in that first half, but somehow went in at 1-1 when Chelsea got quite a late equaliser. But United was so dominant, they had three or four other clear-cut chances aside from Ronaldo's goal. And Ferguson was not exactly renowned for being a master tactician. Everyone knew him for his great man management, and although he would try and adapt his tactics, it was man management, it was motivation. Those were his, that's what you think of when you think of him. So I'd be open to seeing it'd be interesting to see what United do, but you would almost advise that Ten Hag and his coaching staff in that adjoined room that they have at Carrington, and they even have a Sabutio table there out. They play around the Sabutio pieces to see what they can concoct at times. You would advise them to try and, you know, come up with something innovative and unexpected, because they're coming up against such an awesome team. And it was interesting reading Wayne Rooney's column in the Sunday Times. He suggested that United go with 4-4-2, four midfielders, and Martial and Rashford up front. And I think the phrase he used was cheat a bit and leave two players up top. and prey on the counter-attack. It's an interesting suggestion. I don't think United will be doing that. It seems like their 4-2-3-1 has been pretty sacrosanct this season. And also you're coming up such, against a brilliant team that you are going to need everyone working hard and tracking back. And although that might mean players tiring, you've got decent players in reserve. And the issue they'd have, if they're playing four midfielders, they have a shortage of midfielders. There's no Sabitzer. So you're going to need someone on the bench, probably McTominay. And he could have an important role to play. He did quite well in the League Cup final when him and Sabitzer came on. That seemed to take the game away from Newcastle, I thought, at that point. Because I didn't think United were managing the game very well at all in the second half. But their energy, it did dent the momentum that Newcastle were trying to build to get back into the game. So who knows what Ten Hag will do. And I suppose it would almost be slightly disappointing if we all correctly predict his team and in that formation. But if they do that and if they win, then nobody's going to care, because that will, you know, they'll have won the FA Cup.
Question is, Samuel, before we leave, before we end the podcast, do the press pack have a Sabutio table for tomorrow morning for the game against United's media staff, communication staff? That's the question. Because Samuel, where are you going tomorrow?
Well, yes, yeah. Well, I wish you were joining me, but you're not. But tomorrow is Tuesday. It's the press game. It's the press against the United media staff. Neil Custis is our manager again, as he was last season. He was scribbling down the team on his notepad yesterday, trying to get his, you know, I've had quite the role change this year. I've gone from right back last year to
left wing
this year. Laurie Whittle said, "Oh, an inverted winger." I said more like invented winger. I'm under a great deal of pressure there, but yeah, it's a shame you're not going to be.
Well, I've got sleepless nights. I've been having sleepless nights missing that game, but there is a good reason. I am going to see Bruce Springsteen, so I'm in transit when the game's going on, and I've always wanted to see the boss, the real boss.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be his last dance. And I said today to a colleague, I was like, to be fair, he's probably going to be wheeled out on a Zimmer frame at this point, because Springsteen is that old now. I've been watching clips and he's definitely getting on. So there's always next year for me, Samuel. Give us a report.
So I suppose, Stephen, for tomorrow, where you could have been at Old Trafford, you will not be having a glory day.
Oh, God. Clip I want the editor. Get it clipped up and put it on Twitter now. Oh God. I'll be dancing in the dark.
You'll
tomorrow,
be dancing
anyways.
In the dark.
Yes, I certainly will. Thanks for your time, Samuel. Thank you.
Thank you. And enjoy your day in Edinburgh.
I certainly will. And thanks to listeners, as usual, head across to YouTube, check it out. We're taking over subscribers, and head across to all the audio platforms to get the podcast, Spotify, Apple, etc. Have a great week and take care.